Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about dyslexia. It's the most common learning disability found in children. It can be difficult to diagnose, and it can be incredibly challenging for parents to find the help they need for their kids. Getting help can be life-changing. This hour, I'll talk with parents, educators, and experts. We also want to hear your stories. You can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org or give us a call, 866-780-9100. My first guest today is Katie Grieving. She's president of the Iowa chapter of Decoding Dyslexia. She's also the mother of a son who's been diagnosed with dyslexia. Hello, Katie.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today.
It's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And I know that you were involved in bringing Decoding Dyslexia to Iowa in 2013. Why did you decide that that was an important thing for you to do? Decoding Dyslexia is an advocacy group to get people who are diagnosed with dyslexia the help that they need. Why did you feel the need for this group in Iowa?
Well, as a parent, when my son started to struggle, I felt very alone. And really, there was not a lot of help available in terms of an organization or resources that could point me in the right direction. Shortly after my son was diagnosed and we began getting him the services that he needed, the Iowa chapter started forming. And when I found out about that, I was thrilled and eager to be a part of it and felt this is what's been missing for parents and even teachers in Iowa, is a group like this.
And tell me about your personal journey with dyslexia with your children.
Sure. I have two children, one of whom has dyslexia, and we began noticing signs and symptoms probably in preschool and kindergarten. And what we noticed probably from the beginning were a lot of fine motor difficulties with handwriting and drawing. Our son actually knew his letters and sounds pretty well and didn't have any speech issues. Both of those are pretty common symptoms of dyslexia. He did not have those at that age, and he did have a tremendous vocabulary, and adults would often comment to us about how bright and intelligent he was. But in kindergarten and first grade, the struggles really began, and he was not making progress with reading or writing or spelling or any of those basic activities that they're working with kids on. He really couldn't transfer those letters into any kinds of words or sounds, and he was very frustrated. He also couldn't write like the other children, and we started noticing a lot of emotional symptoms, an extreme dislike of school, not wanting to go, a lot of emotional and mental health symptoms as well.
So where did you turn for help when you started to see these things happening? Because it doesn't sound like the idea of dyslexia would have been the first thing you would have thought of, because your son did know his letters.
Yes, he did. And, you know, I did speak with his teachers, and they were very kind and reassuring. And I think most teachers don't want parents to worry. They want parents to feel like everything is going to be okay. And I did hear things like, you know, don't worry, he's young, he's a boy, he'll catch up, you won't be worried about this in a few years. But it's funny that you asked me that, because I remember distinctly sitting at my computer and typing in the words first grade reading struggle and feeling like that Google search changed my life. And that led to a whole, world of information about dyslexia and what the signs and symptoms are. And even though my child did know his letters and sounds, he's actually quite a classic case of dyslexia. So all of that was just screaming at me, those signs and symptoms that he had.
After you started to suspect, then what did you need to do to get him a diagnosis?
I did speak with the school, and I was aware that in Iowa, our schools don't offer diagnostic services for anything. That's just kind of the way most schools are set up, which is fine. And I pursued a private evaluation. We went and saw a psychologist who specialized in learning disabilities, and my son underwent quite a bit of testing, and we did receive diagnoses of dyslexia and something called dysgraphia, which is a handwriting disability that is quite common with dyslexia. And it was very validating. It was very validating to know that, okay, what I'm seeing, it's not all in my head, and there are things we can do. So we did get the private diagnosis.
And when you got that diagnosis and took that to the school, what happened then?
Well, you know, that was kind of where the interesting things began to happen. I think as a parent, you think you just need to take this diagnosis to the school and all of the blocks will fall into place, if you will. I expected it to mean a lot more than it did. Now, the teachers that worked with him one-on-one were very interested in it, and most of them said, I don't know anything about this, but I'd like to learn. They were all very surprised that he had been diagnosed with this. When I did speak with administration, that's really where my frustration began and where I realized that this is a systemic problem. My school principal told me that, you know, it was great that we had this information, but it really didn't matter at school because that was a medical diagnosis and they don't deal with that at school. So it really wasn't going to change anything. And at the time, even though my son was really struggling, he was not low enough to qualify for special education in reading. He did in handwriting, but not in reading. And so they said, you know, it's great that you have this, but we aren't going to do anything about it. And further down the road, I did go speak with my district superintendent, and that is what really left me, just shocked. I was essentially told, I provided a lot of information to the superintendent about how common dyslexia was, the research, what we could be doing as a district, and I was essentially told that that was not accurate and that was not happening in our district because we're a real high-performing district and that couldn't be going on here. And, you know, they were certainly sorry I'd had this struggle, but there just weren't really any other kids that were going to have this. So it was shocking. It still is, as I say it out loud, even though it was years ago.
So what did you do? I mean, as a parent with this
diagnosis,
you knew that your son was struggling in school and you felt like the school wasn't going to be able to give
him
anything.
Well, you know, I will never forget one of my son's teachers who is incredibly kind. She approached me privately and she said, you really can't tell anybody that I'm telling you this, but they're never going to do what you're asking for at school, and you're going to have to do this yourself. And so I ended up quitting my job, and I started homeschooling my child. I went to workshops. I went to any kind of professional development I could find. I took classes. I read books. I did webinars, and I taught my own child to read. And we did partial homeschooling, which is called dual enrollment here in Iowa, and we still do that right now. It's a great option, but clearly it was a life-changing thing. I gave up my job to do this.
And not every parent is going to have the ability to do that.
No. And yes, I mean, I think we're going to the exact same place, that this is a problem, that, you know, one of the basic functions of our public schools are to teach our children to read. And so when you asked about why I became involved with decoding dyslexia, it's because I feel very strongly that this kind of help needs to be available within our public schools, both in and outside of special ed. We shouldn't have parents having to pay thousands of dollars for their kids to achieve basic literacy.
Now, through Decoding Dyslexia, you have been very active in advocating for change on the government level. In 2014, there was a law signed, the first dyslexia law signed by Governor Branstad, that put a definition of dyslexia into the state code. The idea was to clear the way for schools to recognize and help students with dyslexia. Have you seen changes, do you feel, in the last 3 years because that law was signed?
Yes, I think we have. I think we've seen increased awareness. I think we've seen more willingness to use the word, especially from leadership. I'm not sure that it has trickled down to everyday folks that maybe are doing our special ed evaluations or to every classroom teacher, but 5 years ago, you would not have seen a single course on dyslexia in the AEA professional development catalog. It just wasn't there. And now we see that there. We know teachers want that information. We know that parents, when they are still told this is medical, we don't deal with it, we have something to fall back on, and we can say, this is a reading disability, and this is in the educational domain. So to answer your question, I think we have seen changes. I think we still have a ways to go.
How common do you feel dyslexia is?
Well, it is very common, and I always go to the experts for this. The American Academy of Pediatrics issued a statement in the 2000s about this, and they state that dyslexia affects anywhere from 5 to 20% of the population, depending on the criteria used, depending on the severity cutoff that is used. So it's very common, and you will find kids with dyslexia in every single classroom.
And I know that there are many things that people have learned about dyslexia over the years that may or may not be true. Does it seem to affect boys more than girls, for example? That's something that we heard for many years.
Yes, and no, I believe the research says it's equally as common. I think boys are identified more because perhaps they are identified as behavioral concerns more commonly than girls are. So that may lead to an exploration of learning disabilities or learning differences, but there really isn't any conclusive research to show that it's disproportionately affecting boys.
And how is your son doing now?
He's doing very well. Thank you for asking. He is older now, and one of the things that I was told happens is that the elementary school years are quite challenging for students with dyslexia because that is when they are expected to learn to read, write, and spell, and memorize math facts, all things that can be really hard for a student with dyslexia. But when our students start getting into the upper grades, where critical thinking, creativity, vocabulary, innovative things like that are a little more emphasized, they can do very well. And my son happens to go to a school that offers one-to-one technology, which means he has a device just like every other student. He has an iPad, and that has been wonderful. It allows him to listen to audiobooks when needed, to use some technology to do his writing, and you know, he's doing very well. But I don't regret doing what we did. I think it was the best decision we made to remove him from the public school environment and take that whole situation into our own hands.
Well, Katie Grieving, thank you so much for sharing your story and your information with us today.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Katie Grieving is president of the Iowa chapter of Decoding Dyslexia. She's also the mother of a son who's been diagnosed with dyslexia. We will continue our conversation about dyslexia in a moment. We'd love to hear your concerns, your experiences as well. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about dyslexia, and we'd love to hear from you. If this is something you have experience with in your life, with your children, or personal experience yourself, feel free to share your story. Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org. You can call us at 866-780-9100. With me now is Lisa Henry Vasquez. She is education consultant at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics and has a background in special education and reading, and she is here with me now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here today. And we were just talking with Katie about getting her son diagnosed with dyslexia. And before we even talk about the diagnostic process, let's further define dyslexia a little bit. We know it's a learning disorder that affects the ability to read and sometimes affects the ability to write. What kind of definition do you like to use?
I like to think primarily of dyslexia as a language-based learning disorder. It's neurologically based. I like to think of that in terms of differences in the brain, in its development and its function. So those are common ways to refer to that specific reading disability.
And Katie was telling us that in some ways it really showed itself in behavioral issues with her son, rather than being sort of a straightforward, oh, he's having a difficult time learning to read. I mean, what are the signs that lead people to come to you to get diagnosed?
Early on, with preschoolers, kindergartners, it may be those would be signs that the family has seen at home, like Katie spoke of. And in her case, it was more in the writing area. But often you'll hear families talk about their youngsters having difficulty with rhyming, early rhyming activities that should be fun, and that's just not making sense to that early reader. Or difficulty remembering letters or remembering numbers, confusion in that way. And so that would be some of the earlier signs. Later into elementary school, you may see the reader that is struggling to read words and their reading is slow and choppy. And then when there are frustrations in the school day, those may also be noticed in behaviors, off-task behaviors, reluctance to participate. So the behaviors certainly can extend because of difficulties with reading.
Now, of course, all students learn to read at different rates. Mm-hmm. And so not everybody's going to hit the same milestones at the same time, the
Correct.
Same year. When someone comes to you, I know that there's an extensive diagnostic process, but give me kind of a thumbnail sketch. How do you diagnose dyslexia? What are you looking for?
We would be, and I say we because in my particular setting at the Center for Disabilities and Development, which is a clinic attached to University of Iowa Stead Family Children's Hospital, we approach it as a multidisciplinary team. And so individuals participating would likely be a neuropsychologist, a speech and language pathologist, and then an educator. And we would approach this as a team, each of us looking for different components. I am responsible for the academic components. So as I assess, I'm looking for patterns of strengths and weaknesses within an academic profile. I would assess not only reading components. Reading is quite complex. I would also assess in the written expression area and mathematics area. So it's a comprehensive academic assessment.
How old does a child need to be diagnosed with dyslexia? Because, again, I mean, even if these behaviors or these signs start to show up when the child is in preschool, it's a really hard thing to test in a pre-reader, I would think.
It is. That is very true. And in my experience, certainly testing can occur in screening as early as preschool and kindergarten and first grade. I think tests that we go through to look at strengths and weaknesses will provide more pertinent information as the child is mid-first to mid-second grade. So in my situation, in our clinical experience, we would likely diagnose once they have had that exposure to reading, to interventions, noticing their response to those interventions. So in our clinic, that diagnosis would come probably mid-first to mid-second grade. But the testing certainly you can establish some baseline information prior to that in preschool and kindergarten.
Well, and again, Katie was talking about her experience getting her son diagnosed with dyslexia. How do parents and how do students come to you? What is the referral process?
Our referral process, we receive referrals from various sources. Often it would be from the local medical provider, would be suggesting to a family that they reach out to our clinic for a comprehensive evaluation. Sometimes the schools will suggest to families that they should consider this type of an evaluation. And sometimes it's word of mouth, networking between families that have had the experience of being in our clinic and have been very satisfied and appreciative, some relief, knowing, as Katie had, that relief once that diagnosis was established.
And As a parent, I mean, I remember when both of my children were going through the learning to read process, the learning to write process, there were things that would show up like a letter reversal a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, D's and B's are difficult for a lot of kids. Now, parents are prone to worrying. Are there some things that maybe we worry too much about when our kids are in kindergarten and first grade if we see them reversing symbols, for example?
Reversing symbols is, I would say, common at that age level and with experience. And that's probably one of those areas that is more of a myth as far as it should be something that's noticed. But in relation to dyslexia, in my experience, letter reversals really is more confusion of directionality versus a visual processing difficulty. Now, there are some individuals that have dyslexia that also have visual processing difficulties, but visual processing difficulties would not be a primary feature of a diagnosis of dyslexia.
All right. What are some of the other common myths that people may think they know about dyslexia, but really don't, because it's so different from the idea that the words are backwards or that the letters are reversed. What are some of the other things that you kind of run into when you're talking about dyslexia?
One of the things that Katie mentioned as far as prevalence, boys and girls. Another often misunderstood feature would be the idea that one is going to outgrow dyslexia. One will be more, will succeed, one with, especially with early interventions. So there is hopefulness with that. But very likely those symptoms and characteristics will be with that individual lifelong. It is really working through and having those early interventions that will support them to be successful.
All right. So this is something that you learn to live with, but it doesn't go away.
That would be my interpretation of that and my experience, yes.
And we also talked about the percentage of people who have dyslexia, and she threw out that figure, 5 to 20%. Do you feel like that's accurate?
I do, yes. And it, as she said, it really depends on the criteria being used. And I think as important, when we narrow that population to those with learning disabilities, the majority of students with learning disabilities have reading disabilities, reading disorders.
I wonder, because it seems like it's been difficult for people to get diagnosed with dyslexia and get, you know, find that diagnosis, is there a concern that it may be a higher percentage of than that? Or do you feel like maybe at this point in time, people are getting the diagnoses that they need?
As Katie referenced, I think that the awareness has really grown. So I see more and more families and parents like Katie that are really stepping to the forefront and becoming informed and being advocates for their children and passing that along to others, as Katie is doing.
I'm talking with Lisa Henry Vasquez, education consultant at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. I want to bring a couple more people into the conversation here in a moment, but let's also get to the phones. A lot of people are here with their stories, and John is on the line in West, or sorry, Peter is on the line in West Des Moines. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Charity. I wanted to tell you about my story. As a child, I'm 57 years old, and I grew up in the Des Moines public school system. And as a child, we had a teacher who consulted with my parents and recognized that I had a reading disability. And my parents, my dad was on the school board, and he was lucky enough to find a child psychologist who recognized the problem and then went to work on getting myself a tutor to help with reading and also math. The skills I needed to help overcome this. But even as an adult, I still certain, you know, there's a, I still say that reversing letters and numbers is part of dyslexia. It's a very minor part, but I still suffer from it. But as an adult, I'm very conscious of the fact that I do this. And so anytime, especially with numbers, that I'm dealing with numbers, and in in my business, I have to do with numbers, I double-check myself. And that's how I'm able to overcome the reversal with that problem. And on the reading part, As a child, I discovered science fiction. And that made me a voracious reader, and it's dramatically helped to overcome that reading disability. Finding a love of some type of writing, whether it be science fiction or poetry or whatever, I think it helps a child.
Well, Peter, it sounds like you did have the support that you needed, although that certainly reminds us that, again, this is not something that you outgrow with time. Thank you so much for sharing your story. And I want to introduce Kim Swartz now. She is the regional administrator with Central Rivers Area Education Agency. Hello, Kim.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, thank you for having me.
So we were just talking about the diagnosis process. Of course, the area education agencies all around the state of Iowa support children, support families with special needs. When someone suspects dyslexia, can they go to their area education agency? Is this something, a diagnostic test that you also provide?
We do provide evaluation when people come to us with concerns. Iowa is a non-categorical state, so when we do evaluations, we don't label. So we would not give parents and families a label of dyslexia, but we're really looking at what are the skills that the student may be missing, what are the needs that they have, and working in that area, but we don't actually label it as dyslexia.
Okay. Although I'm sure that students who have had that diagnosis, their families also come to you with the diagnosis and say, my child needs assistance at school. What does an AEA do then?
Well, we always work with the districts and with the teachers, and we go through an evaluation process, and we really do look at any information that is brought to us. So I did hear Katie say that when her son was having difficulty, that the district said, we're not really looking at that. That's a medical diagnosis, and I think that's been a change in the past few years, because we will really take any of that information that the parents have and do a assessment along with that to come up with where do we think the child is struggling and what are the needs that they may have.
The school, of course, is where the child is going to be helped. I mean, what kinds of assistance can the area education agency give to a teacher who's working with a student who has been diagnosed with dyslexia?
Yeah, we have a lot of resources, and I do think there's much more of a focus. We're getting a lot of questions from parents and families and teachers, and so we do provide professional learning. Again, I heard Katie say, you know, years ago you didn't even see coursework that had the word dyslexia in it, and all of our area education agencies now are providing professional learning for teachers in that area. We have professional libraries that have information pertaining to struggling readers and dyslexia. We also have DVDs that are loaned out that give information around dyslexia. We have simulations where teachers can actually go in and kind of get an idea of what it might be like to have dyslexia. We all have assistive technology, so when I talk about assistive technology, that's just really tools that can help students to really be fully included in that general education classroom and access all of that material.
Can you give me a specific example of assistive technology that could help a student with dyslexia?
Yeah. So we would have things like text readers. So for students who are struggling to gain access to that text, there's lots of tools out there that can actually read that text to students, audio books. There are programs that can reduce kind of the complexity of the text for those students that are struggling. So those are a few examples. And we have online resources that have thousands and thousands of books to be able to support students in those areas.
So a technology that allow them to access the information without the reading component getting in the way, although reading is a large part of what students in elementary school are learning to do. So what kind of assistive technology can you offer in the learning to read process?
Well, so one of the things, and I think this has been brought out, so with the learning to read, a lot of the struggles that students have is actually hearing those individual sounds, or what's called phonemes, the phonemic awareness. And so that's a lot of times what it goes back to. So we have coursework to help teachers understand kind of what that is and what they may need to be doing to help support students. So phonemic awareness. So for instance, in the word cake, the sounds k-a-k, do they hear each of those individual sounds, and then strategies and supports to help with that. One of the things from research is around a multisensory approach to learning that. So helping students, making sure that they can see something when you're talking about that they have the auditory part and they're actually using some tactile or kinesthetic, some touching with that. Those are all kind of strategies that we help teachers understand the need for with students with dyslexia or just reading disabilities or concerns.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about dyslexia this hour with me, Kim Swartz of the Central Rivers Area Education Agency, and Lisa Henry Vasquez of the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about dyslexia. We've been talking about diagnosis and what kinds of treatment options or assistance options are available for students in Iowa schools. With me, Lisa Henry Vasquez, education consultant at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. Kim Swartz is here, regional administrator with Central Rivers Area Educational Agency. And we'd love to hear from you. We have a lot of people on the line who want to share their stories. I'm going to go to Karen in Ames next. Hi, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. What's your experience?
Oh, well, my experience is I am from Ames, and we found out that my son had dyslexia. There was something not okay as far as his reading in kindergarten. I specifically asked the AEA to evaluate him, but was denied several times because he seemed what they called normal. Finally, we went to a private child psychologist who evaluated him. And we found out that he's dyslexic, and also has mild ADD. We gave our evaluation to the school, who basically told us that they had programs, and then I was privately told by a caring teacher that the programs that they had would just not be able to help my son. A bunch of parents, and also one of our parents who belongs to Dakota Dyslexia Iowa, we fought the school for 3 years. We finally got a pilot, and we finally got a foundation's K through second. Now we're waiting for our teachers to actually be trained by certified Wilson trainers in the area. As with my son, I worked with him and a private tutor for 2.5 years just to get him to grade level. Since his IQ was high, they told us that they couldn't help us, that he was basically on his own. And I refused to let this child fall behind. And the reason why a lot of us parents fought for this program, and we're hoping to be able to have that from K to 12th grade, is because there's a lot of parents who just can't afford the tutoring. It's so expensive. And if your son or daughter is in the general classroom and he's not disabled enough to have special education, this is a huge problem.
Right. I can imagine that you may have been in a position to get a private tutor, but many families are not.
And the nice thing about when we found a private tutor, we went to ChildServe, and they took our insurance. Otherwise, private tutors could cost anywhere, if you're lucky, $50 an hour to 100 and something an hour. But they are so valuable, and that's the message I want to send parents. If you have a child and the school is not helping you, don't give up. Find the help, because this child is worth it. And try to find volunteers. Continue talking to your school board. We have a lot of great people on our school board, but a lot of them who drag their feet. We now have a new school board who seems to be very helpful in wanting to truly do the right thing for every child. And because you have a program that helps kids with dyslexia, it doesn't mean that it's going to ignore all the other kids. Wilson Foundation, or Wilson itself, is such a great program for all kids. It's a multi-sensory program, and it's a great and strong foundation for all kids. And I think this is a message we need to keep sending to our superintendents and our associate superintendents. And if your school is lucky enough to have a curriculum director, ours isn't really, then you need to continue and continue, because there's a lot of families who just can't afford it.
Oh, Karen, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us today. And I want to give you an opportunity to respond to that, Kim. I know that there are so many needs in schools, and area education agencies work to meet those needs. But do you feel like there are a lot of children who are falling through the cracks?
Well, one of the things that the state of Iowa has done in the last 3 years is the early literacy intervention law. And so there is now a state screening requirement. So that screening happens 3 times a year, and that is required in K-3. So the intent of that law and those screening assessments are to help so that those children don't fall through the cracks. So if they're kind of red flagged, I will say, through that particular system, then that's when we really start to look at, okay, so where do we need to go next? Where are they falling down, and what kind of interventions can we put in place to help support them? And I heard her talk about the Wilson training system, the multisensory approach, which is what I was referring to earlier. So those are some of the kinds of things that the area education agencies are trying to support teachers with, not necessarily a program, but that approach of multisensory.
Now, and we've talked about educating teachers, giving them the tools to help students with this problem. Now, of course, there are many generations of teachers. I know that teachers always engage in continuing education, but that's got to be an incredible challenge to reach all the teachers who are in the classroom who maybe got their initial training 20, 30 years ago.
Well, teachers are required to have ongoing professional development as part of their license, so all teachers need to have some sort of coursework. So this can be part of what they choose to do, or part of what a school district as a total would have teachers do. For instance, in an elementary school, they may just say, this is something that we're going to do together as part of our professional learning for our building.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation now. Amy Dahlke is also a parent of a son with dyslexia. She is a former teacher herself. Hello, Amy.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. Tell me a little bit about your experience with your son. When did you start noticing that maybe he needed more help?
We really noticed things that were unusual to us in preschool. We started noticing that he was mixing up sounds and syllables and words, leaving off syllables when he was speaking. There was a lot of inconsistency in the recalling of letters and sounds. In kindergarten, we already noticed an avoidance of language activities and definitely some of those mental health kinds of things with avoidance of things that were really hard in kindergarten, and it really just kind of progressed from there. The biggest thing that was really that made me take that extra step was that his progress was just slower than what we expected. Given that he was given really good instruction at school, we knew that he had great language exposure in the home as a teacher mom. I was constantly doing, you know, reading and doing language activities and things with him. And so we just knew that, like, the pieces didn't make sense. And that was when we said, you know, when I finally was like, we need to really look into this. And if I would have known those signs, we could have probably had him identified by the end of kindergarten and started the remediation at least 2 years earlier. So that was one of the things that was frustrating for me as a teacher, and I was a licensed teacher, early childhood elementary education degree, I have a reading endorsement, I have a master's of science in education, I had all those qualifications, and I didn't see it. I didn't know what it was. And that was the frustrating part for me as a parent and also as an educator.
I can understand that. How did you get him diagnosed?
We we went through this process before Eliza's was readily available. So I did kind of standard story that you hear here. I called the doctor. The doctor said, call the school. The school said, it's a medical thing. Call the doctor. And like any mom who's done, you know, I heard it said that we do more research than the FBI. And so I just got on and started researching, looking around, reading everything I could, and calling around for people that could help me. And I was eventually put in contact with a speech-language pathologist that was very knowledgeable about dyslexia and could do an evaluation. And so we took him and had him privately. We paid for a private evaluation to find out exactly what was going on with his learning. So,
how is your son doing now?
He's doing really well. It's a lot of hard work for dyslexics to do the remediation, the language-based, multisensory, very explicit. And it's hard work for all those kids to do that. But they work hard. They have incredible grit. They have an incredible resilience and perseverance that are really strengths for our dyslexic kiddos. So they work hard. And the remediation helps them. It addresses the skills that are a struggle for them, and it's just key as to why early intervention is so important.
So, and once you did get the diagnosis, how did you respond to that to get your son the help that he needed? How were you able to do that?
We're very fortunate that we hired a private tutor and we got started. My husband and I just couldn't wait. We knew that time was of the essence to get things going, and so that was what we opted to do, that we were able to do it. It is not an option for everybody, and we're very thankful that we could do that because we didn't want to waste any time. We knew we were already, behind, and we needed to catch up, and so that was how we chose to address it.
You mentioned the things you wished you had known when your son was in kindergarten. What is your advice to parents? What kinds of things should parents be aware of, and what should they do if they see some of these signs?
That's such a big question. As a parent, I can answer that personally as a parent, and I can answer that professionally as a teacher. Personally, as a parent, trust your gut. When you just know that something doesn't make sense, and you're hearing, oh, it's developmental, they'll get there, they'll grow out of it, and you know as a parent that, like, this doesn't make sense to me, trust that, and don't give up, and keep searching for those answers. Decoding Dyslexia Iowa is an incredible resource if you think that your child is struggling with dyslexia or some language-based learning difference. They have provided over 1,800 contacts with parents since they began, and they provide resources and consultations. And so they're a great resource for help. And so as a parent, I would say don't give up. Keep struggling to find those answers. And learn the warning signs. Learn what it looks like. It affects more than just reading. It can affect things like spelling, working memory, procedural learning, things like tying shoes. It affects speaking, rote memorization, and rapid naming, coming up with things quickly and being able to pull out words. So it affects way more than just, it's more than just a reading issue. And so knowing what those warning signs are really important as a parent. On the counterbalance of that, that's also really important professionally, is just to know what you're seeing when things just don't make sense. You're like, I know this kid's really smart. Why are they doing this? When we start really knowing and understanding the symptoms and what it looks like in a classroom, those pieces of the puzzle seem to make a little bit more sense.
Now, I know that you're involved in Decoding Dyslexia, and as I mentioned earlier, this dyslexia was signed into the Iowa Code back in 2014. What else do you think needs to happen in the state of Iowa to make sure kids are getting the help they need?
You know, the very best gift you could give a dyslexic student is a teacher who's really knowledgeable in what dyslexia is, how it affects their brain, how their brain works, the neuroscience of learning to read, and what are the appropriate remediations for it, and what are the best accommodations for them. That would be a gift to any dyslexic student, to have a really knowledgeable teacher. And so in order to do that, we need really great teacher training in our undergraduate and graduate programs. We need specific coursework that really addresses it. Understanding dyslexia does not come in a two-hour course or a two-day course or, you know, a two-week course. It takes time to really learn and understand what's going on in the dyslexic brain. And so we need that for our current teachers, who are amazing. Our state is filled with amazing teachers that really want to learn about this. And so we need to reach them and equip them with this knowledge. And then we really need to make sure that our students who are in our colleges and universities right now in our teacher prep programs, that they are getting that exact same, you know, specific coursework to really equip them to come out knowledgeable and ready to serve this large population of students in our state.
Well, Amy Dahlke, thank you so much for talking with me.
Yeah, thank you so much for talking about this really important issue.
Amy Dahlke, a former teacher, the parent of a son who is diagnosed with dyslexia. We have just a couple of minutes left, and before I let you go, Lisa Henry Vasquez, I'd love to hear from you. You know, I know that there are going to be a lot of parents listening this hour, or grandparents listening this hour, who are thinking, oh, you know, maybe this is something I need to be concerned about with the child in my life. What is your advice for parents who may be worrying about this?
I agree with the families that have shared their experiences today. It is worth the time and sometimes expense to receive and pursue a comprehensive evaluation from likely an independent provider. I certainly support having a team of clinicians go through that process so that the neurocognitive information is gathered and language information as well as academic information. So move forward, work closely with their school teams. School teams are broadening their expertise, and many school teams they're certainly committed to providing services that are appropriate for individuals at risk, individuals with diagnoses. So I see that changing as well.
Lisa Henry Vasquez, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Lisa Henry Vasquez, education consultant at the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. And Kim Swartz, I'm going to end with you this hour. It sounds like this is something that at an area education agency, you're giving it a lot of attention. Teachers are working hard to come up to speed on dyslexia. What are the signs of progress that you are most proud of?
Well, I feel like all of our area education agencies are providing more coursework around and specific to reading difficulties, including dyslexia. I think the fact that as a state we've looked at that and we have an early warning system in place, that's very positive, because we're trying to get the interventions in place for individual students that they need. So I really encourage parents to talk to their teachers, talk to their principals, call your local AEA. We have a website that has information about dyslexia. And so if you don't get the help that you need one place, go somewhere else and keep working on it.
Kim Swartz, thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Kim Swartz, Regional Administrator with Central Rivers Area Education Agency. We've been talking about dyslexia this hour on Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.